You're listening to WMUK. I'm Rebecca Thiel. While many African Americans in the 1920s and 30s were fighting for basic rights, Western Michigan University alum Murs Tate was traveling the world and attending colleges like Oxford University. Community Voices magazine editor Sonia Bernard Holland stumbled upon Tate's story while writing a local history series for the Kalamazoo Gazette. When she opened up the WMU archival boxes, she says she couldn't believe what she found.
There was a graduation certificate from Oxford University, where she was the first African-American to graduate from there in 1935. There were scrapbooks of pictures from around the world that she had taken. And it was like, who is this woman? There was a letter from Mary McLeod Bethune asking her to meet with Eleanor Roosevelt and some other women at the White House. And there was this ticket to the White House for this event. And I'm thinking, I know Mary McLeod Bethune. I've never heard of Murs Tate. And she was just a history professor. It has to be more to her than this, with all these things that I'm finding in these boxes. And so, you know, at first it was overwhelming. I didn't know, you know, what to do with the information. And I wrote the article for The Inquirer, basically saying that she was the first African-American to graduate from Oxford University and the first African-American female to receive a PhD in political science from Radcliffe College and Harvard University. She was a Fulbright scholar in India. She spoke 5 languages. She was a Blanchard, Michigan native. And so, it kind of stayed on my mind for a while. And I went back to look at her scrapbooks more, and I noticed there was a picture of her with a bunch of kids. And they had a banner that said Travel Club, where she would take kids to Niagara Falls, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., different places she taught them in her history class to show them these places, you know, in real life. And I thought, this is amazing. This woman back in during the Depression era, this was 1927, they were taking these kids, 40 kids sometimes, on trains to Washington, D.C., to see the Washington Monument, to see the White House. I mean, she was amazing. And I'm like, I need to know more about her.
What was it like for her growing up? And did her parents really encourage her to achieve this? Or, you know, was that kind of a confidence she found on her own?
You know, you think about her family being Underground Railroad conductors, you know, so they already had a sense of pride, you know, about themselves. They had a sense of independence. They had a sense of showing other people that there's a different way, that, you know, you can be free. You can, you know, do things. So her family had that mentality. So even though they were farmers, you know, in Blanchard, Michigan, like I said, they were part of the first Negro settlers, you know, she had a mind to say, I don't just have to be here. My family moved, you know, to find a better life in a place that wasn't even settled. You know, she said in some of her writings that when she walked her 4 miles to school each way, that she would read her geography books. And she would read her history books, and she would memorize the Gettysburg Address, and she would envision her places that she saw in the geography books and said, I want to visit all those places one day. One day I want to visit all of those places. When her school burnt down in Blanchard High School when she was in 10th grade, all the kids were graduated because they had to build a new school, and they were like, okay, you're graduated. And Murs, the youngest student, was the valedictorian, 10th grade. And she didn't stop there. She wanted more. She wanted to attend college. So she moved to Battle Creek, where she didn't know anyone, and worked as a maid on a home for her room and board. And she did it and received all A's, you know, while she was there.
Let's go back to the travel club.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some critics had said, you know, of Murs Tate's travel club, that these African-American students, they're not going to, you know, succeed in life. But that actually turned out not to be true.
Exactly. Murs Tate wanted these kids to see the possibilities in the world. Do you think during the 1920s, most of their parents maybe had been servants, you know, in homes working as maids or chauffeurs or, you know, that type of thing. And they didn't know many professional African-Americans. So she wanted to expose them to that. And a lot of the professionals that helped fund her excursions, the kids had a chance to meet as well. So they got to meet these, you know, upwardly mobile African-Americans who were helping fund some of their efforts to travel. You know, Murs Tate, you know, thought that by them going out and seeing what the possibilities were in the world, that their minds would even open up. So you don't have to just be, you know, a servant or a maid or something that people are saying that you only have the capabilities of doing. It's, you can do more than that. And a lot of the professors at Crispix Attucks had that same mentality. So these kids were learning this from professors. Mers went on to get a master's degree from Columbia University while she was a teacher at Crispix Attucks. She went in the summers and took the correspondence courses and things like that. And that was something that the principal stressed to the professors. We want you to get as much education as possible to show these students it doesn't just stop at high school, that there's always more. So she wanted to be not only the example for the kids, you know, but to show them other examples as well. So as a matter of fact, in 1932, she left the high school there on a scholarship to attend Oxford University, where she would be the first African-American to graduate in 1935. So she walked her walk. She showed the students that there are possibilities out there, and they were able to watch her as she progressed throughout her educational career, too.
You know, listening to all of her achievements, you get overwhelmed.
Right.
Because you think, I am never going to achieve all of this in my life,
right.
You know, and I don't have nearly the barriers. Mm-hmm. I guess, what wisdom should we take away from her story for our own lives?
You know, I think just having dreams and going for them, not thinking, well, I can't do that because, or I can't do that because. She was a go-getter. She didn't see barriers. She had them, but her excuse wasn't, oh, I can't do this because. It was, okay, I can't go this way. What other way can I get around? And she would do that. And I think it was a challenge for her at some point to get over barriers. There was some things I was reading in Washington, D.C. when I was researching her, when she was a Fulbright scholar in India. And when she got there, you know, all the students are talking about where they're from. And then, of course, the issue comes up when you're a student. Well, how much are you getting? How much is your scholarship or how much are you getting paid? And she found out that she was getting a lot less than anyone else that was in the program. And her mind was, is this because I'm African-American? Is this because I'm a woman? What is the excuse? And they wrote her back and said, oh, well, you know, because you're from the United States and the money's, it was just some excuse they made. And she wrote back to them saying, well, I won't accept that. I want to get the same amount as everyone else is getting. And then there's a letter from the State Department that says to the coordinators of the program, give her whatever she wants or she'll be a public relations nightmare. So it's like, she wasn't just going to stop with your excuse. It's like, okay, I need to get what everyone else is getting. Why am I not? And this is just not fair. I'm not going to settle for this. And she did that for other African-American women who she saw being treated unfairly. At Howard University, she learned that all the women were getting paid a third of what the men were getting paid. And she went into the records, and the president of the school gave her permission to go into the, you know, the human resources records or whatever they were. And she gave them a report and said, this is what they're getting paid. This is what we're getting paid. These are the experiences we have that are more than some of the men. We want equal pay. And they changed the pay because she did that. And it wasn't just for her. It was for all the women there. So she did a lot of things that she never got credit for that people may not even know that she did. I don't even know if the women at the school knew that Mers was behind that, getting their pay raise. But she didn't look for the fanfare. She wasn't in it for that. You know, she just wanted to have that fair shot, and she wanted other people to have that as well.
That was journalist and founder of the Mers Tate Travel Club, Sonia Bernard Hollins. You can hear a longer interview with her on our website. Bernard Hollins' photobiography on Mers Tate will come out in March. For WMUK, I'm Rebecca Thiel.